2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for being with us for the Greenhouse Show this morning. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We have a texter asking, Ton, they say they want to plant a columnar evergreen next to their porch. Their house is north-facing, so it needs to tolerate shade. Any suggestions? And they live in Santa Quinn on the Bench.
Ah, stomping grounds. So anything that, if you need a conifer that will tolerate shadier locations, the fir trees. And so in the spring, a lot of garden centers, especially the larger ones, will have a lot of specialty conifers that you may only find for 4 or 6 weeks out of the year. But I would, if there was a columnar white fir, that would be my first choice. But even if it got 6 or so hours of sunlight a day from maybe like a northwest exposure or something, that would be okay to do another something like a spruce. But if it's truly shaded, it seems like just in observing plants all over the place that the fir trees, the true firs, are more shade tolerant than the other ones.
Next texter is asking, they have a Meyer lemon tree that has consistently bloomed and then the buds fall off. It's never produced fruit. Why would that be?
Light, the things that cause those to fall off include light and temperature. And so if it's not getting enough light, the buds will fall off, or if it is too wet, that will cause it to happen. But just, I know people that can get citrus to grow. They generally have a solarium or a greenhouse, but they're another one of those plants like the bougainvillea that are just difficult to really, to truly have healthy lemons or healthy orange. There's some citrus that do a little better indoors. I think Calamondin orange, which is more of an orange that you would just use for marmalades and things. The Meyer's lemon is one that seems to do okay. But anytime I hear someone growing citrus, oftentimes they've done nothing wrong. It's just that they're quite difficult to grow as a houseplant.
Okay. Next texter saying most of the trees in the Cache Valley did not go into dormancy before freezing the leaves on the branches. We've been talking about that this morning. This person has 10 large honey locusts, and they're wondering, these are about 24 years old, and they're wondering if they're going to be okay in the spring. What do you think?
Well,
it's hard to tell.
It's hard to say.
They're that age, though.
How old did it say they were?
I believe 24 years.
Okay. So last time, I used to live up in Cache Valley, and in 2011, we had a similar situation to where it was later in the year, but we went from the 50s down to 0 degrees in late November, and the honey locusts didn't fare that well. It seemed like that they weren't completely dormant, and that sudden cold snap really did some damage to them. And then the next year, not all honey locusts, but I saw a significant number of them not leaf out normally, to where when they did leaf out, the leaves were fewer and you had dead branches. And the only thing I could really blame it on was that going from the 50s down to zero in one day.
Right.
And so I'm not saying that anything's going to happen to them, but any time you have a situation like that, and especially if the leaves are still green, it's never good for a tree, but it's Wasatch Front wide, region wide. I was up in Montana in early October when their apocalypse snowstorm, and they had it in September. But all we can do at this point is see what happens in the spring. And I think that, you know, things will leaf out normally and we may see some residual effects. Sometimes, like in cherry trees, you'll have an event like this and they leaf out normally and grow for 3 or 4 years. And all of a sudden you'll see orchards worth of trees collapse. And it's just residual damage from 3 or 4 years ago that's finally caught up to the tree. And so when these events happen, you sometimes don't know for 4 or 5 years the end result.
So I've never seen this before on a text question, but it's all in Japanese figures. So I'm going to answer their second question, which is written in English. They say a landscaper planted 3 exfoliating bark maples. They're in full sun most of the day with rock mulch around them. This person's worried that they're getting too hot in the summer. They were planted last summer and they had leaf scorch. Are they going to die?
No, probably not. When they say exfoliating bark, I wonder if we got like a Google Translate. What they planted were paper bark maples.
Okay.
And they're extremely slow growing and they look a little like a Japanese maple. They're not as refined. And they can be a little bit eccentric looking for their first 5 to 10 years. But they have a shedding or a peeling bark on them. And then if they have time in the fall, they have a really nice orangey red fall color. And they do absolutely fine here, but they're extremely slow. And so as long as it wasn't getting overwatered, which is, you know, how do you know for sure? I think that the tree will probably establish and be okay because paper bark maples, once established, are extremely durable, but it can take 2 or 3 years for them to get enough roots out to be completely adapted to our drier climate.
And a little bit of leaf scorch won't necessarily kill a tree.
If it's brand new and you see just a little leaf scorch through July and August and September, it's perfectly normal. As long as you've got 60 or 70% of the total canopy that's healthy, and so even if you have some scorch around the leaf, if 70% of that leaf is intact, the tree's going to be just fine.
Okay, and I don't know what your first question was, so you'll need to retext that question. Not sure about the Japanese symbols. I guess there are people who have those on their phone. And maybe they just didn't switch them soon enough. I can't read that, but I wish I could read Japanese.
You know, I don't. It doesn't do it anymore.
I'm challenged.
The Google Translator. Mm-hmm. There was a point that I could point my phone at a sign, and just miraculously, it would go from Japanese to English as I was holding my phone at it. You had to be very still, and maybe that's why it's not there anymore. But I can still take a picture of writing in another language, and Google Translator has you highlight it, and then it just translates it for you.
That's just too funny.
But I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, the number to text us again, 57500. We'd be happy to answer your questions, or you can call us at 801-575-8255. That is KSL Talk, and you're listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse Show with Maria Anton. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255 or KSL Talk. Or you can text us at 57500. We do have a texter asking, this is another Meyer lemon tree question. They say that their tree does produce well, but how do they prune it?
as little as possible is what I would do. But the Meyer lemon, because it is more of a bush form, what I would do is go in and find the longest branches that are, I guess we might refer to as the worst offending branches for causing it to be too big.
Mm-hmm.
And I would prune just a few of those branches toward the base of the shrub. And it might only take one or two of them and then just leave it alone. And that way you're going to be leaving a lot of fruiting wood that will produce those just wonderful smelling flowers, and you'll continually get fruit production. The thing you don't want to do is to get your shears out and just give it a general haircut, because that would cut most of the fruit producing wood off.
All right. The next person has a 20-year-old Gleason Early Alberta peach tree. You know, speaking with the cold is difficult because you can't breathe through your nose. But it has Carinium blight. They've been treating it with copper for 3 years. They've lost half of the leaves off the tree in June and July this year. And they've recently purchased some Daconil, which says to treat 1 to 2 more times to mid to late winter before the buds begin to swell. What are they looking for to do with winter treatment? What's the timing before or after the rain?
Well, whether
during a clear spell,
using copper or Daconil, the timing on Carinium blight sometimes can be critical. And so the best time of year to actually put a fungicide on a tree is when you have 50% leaf drop in the fall.
Okay.
Or thereabouts. The Carinium blight fungus is active at temperatures above, I believe, about 43 degrees. And so even on a warm winter day, you can be getting slow, but you still can be getting new infection. And that's why the Daconil is saying to spray a couple times in late winter, because if we're above 45, the fungus is active. And so it's saying to do some preventative ones. And when I would do it is on warmer winter days when you actually have some activity. And then when the tree is leafing out, you may get some protection from a dormant oil, because those will go after fungus. And then in later spring, when the flowers drop off and all the flowers have dropped, and right after that, the petals have dropped, right after that point, you're going to use a different fungicide. Daconil's not registered to be used on fruit when it's actively growing in a lot of situations. Mm. And so you would switch over to something like liquid F-stop. And the second most critical time of the year is when the petals drop from the tree. Now, some other things: you don't want to have overhead sprinklers hitting the tree. That will spread it. Prune the worst branches out. If you have a branch that is just entirely infested, prune it out. And then make sure that as you prune and things and handle that tree, if you've been handling branches that with your pruners or even your hands that have that infection, you want to sterilize your pruners or wash your hands so you don't accidentally spread it to another stone fruit like a plum or a cherry or something like that.
Yeah, this is Stephen Layton, and he's really concerned about the timing as well. I mean, does he do it before or after the rain? Does he have to wait for a clear spell of several weeks?
It's never wise to spray right before a rainstorm unless it's fire blight. You want that fungicide to stay on there as long as possible. The label will spell all of this out. It'll say, you know, don't apply before a rainstorm or whatever. But the critical times are at 50% leaf drop, and then again after petal fall in the spring.
What if there's snow on the branches?
No spraying.
Okay. All right. The number to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. This person has two Japanese maples that did not shed their leaves. This is really a problem I can see across the Wasatch Front. This person's actually calling from the Cache Valley, and they're wondering what your prediction is. Don't say that word. Don't say branch death.
Oh, well, wait for spring and see what happens. How's that?
I love that suggestion, because really at this point you can't tell.
No. Unless the conductive tissue is brown underneath, and maples sometimes can be difficult to determine if you don't know what you're looking for. And so if they, you know, say they have a portion of a branch that the leaves froze to the tree or they never fell off, if they cut a portion of it, you know, enough and took it into JD and to his office, he could carve under it and see if he could see any living tissue underneath.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next person texting a question. They have two beautiful weeping pussy willow trees next to their front door. How and when do they trim them and get rid of the dead branches underneath?
So any dead branch can come out now because it's not benefiting the tree. You're not hurting anything by cutting them out. Sometimes you actually benefit the tree by having branches that may gone that may be harboring diseases or something.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, the weeping willow, you want to enjoy the little pussy willows in the spring, in early spring. But what you would do is, if especially if they're the weeping types, you would go in toward the top of the tree and make cuts not concentric around. So if you went in there and let's say the branches were hanging to the ground, and you went in and 3 feet off the ground, you just gave it a general haircut so it looks like an umbrella. That looks fine, but what happens when it shoots new growth is the new growth goes out sideways and then it drops down again. And so now you've got a step in the tree. And so the key to avoiding this is to cut the branches so that one is maybe a foot lower than the next one. And so you stagger where you cut if you need to raise the branches up so you don't have this obvious kind of step-looking thing in the tree as it regrows.
Oh, that was a complicated answer.
Well, in weeping trees, it's not that they're complicated, but I've seen a few times to where people have gone in and just lollipopped them or made them look like an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, you go look at it and there's an obvious like step look. So the branches go down, sideways down, and it can look a little bit silly.
Okay. I have an odd question just off the top of my head. If somebody has like an evergreen and the previous owner had gone in and lobbed off the bottom branches, do those ever grow back in?
In general, no. So junipers, pines, any of the conifers we grow here, once you have pruned the green needles off the branch, it will never grow back.
I'm very sad to hear that.
If you cut a branch back to the trunk, the other branches above it will eventually kind of droop and weep down over a number of years, but those branches that were cut are gone forever.
Oh, okay. I'm sad to hear that. You're listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show. You can call us 801-575-8255 or text us at 57500. We'll take a break for the top of the hour news and we'll be back with more.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.